Welcome to Bigger Than the Game with Darami and Jose. I'm Darami Dove. I'm joined by my tag team partner, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Jose Ruiz. What's going on, man?
Darami Dove. What's up, my brother? How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. And this is something, you know, we try to do anniversaries on this show. And November of 92 is a special one because if you've listened to our show, or if you're watching our show, go back to our podcast feed. One of the first like five episodes we ever did was on 90s heavyweights, right, Jose? And
And
I think the creme of the fights in that great 90s heavyweight era was Bo Holyfield 1.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and we even talked about it. That episode was one of my favorite ones, Darami. It was just a lot of fun. And it was it kind of – I almost forgot how – like how many great heavyweights there was in the 90s, right? Like, because we always think of like Tyson, you know, going to prison, and it's like the heavyweight division is trash. Like, that's definitely was not the case. And if anything, and we'll get into this, like it's one of the top eras of heavyweight boxing, in my opinion. So, and this is the one, you know, this fight right here that we're about to watch is one of probably the best fight.
And it's something because you can go back probably at least 125 years and, you know, you say those terms heavyweight champion of the world and it means something. And it's some of like the most powerful names in sports, like powerful words in sports, like you're the heavyweight champ. But throughout the history of the heavyweight championship, it's been a lot of like great fighters, but they're fighting in not great eras, and they're fighting bum of the month, like you heard with Joe Louis. And there's really, you have two great heavyweight eras. Some say maybe right now we might have a third, but time will tell, I feel. But you have the 70s with Ali, Frazier, Foreman, Norton, Ernie Shavers, you know, Leon Spinks even comes on, Joe Frazier, all those guys. And then you have the 90s, really. Those are the two great, real heavyweight runs where the division has more than just one or two, like, legit fighters.
Yeah, there's some great fighters, right, in the 90s. You know, we talk about, you know, Tyson obviously started the 90s, but we all know what happened with his situation. And, you know, but you had Holyfield, you know, I was talking about, you know, our last episode was, like, five great sports moments or places we would want to be, right? And Tyson and Douglas was one of mine. And, you know, we were talking about it during that episode. That fight was a warm-up to Tyson Holyfield, which would have been such a great fight. And we got to see that, but that was later on. I think that time would have been a really good time to watch both of those guys go at it. But you have Holyfield, you have Riddick Bowe, Lennox Lewis comes. Like, there's so many top, like, notch heavyweight, you know, fighters. And, you know, George Foreman comes back. Like, it's just some incredible stuff, you know what I mean? Like, and there's so many great fights. These guys all fought each other. Now, there's a couple fights that we wish we could have seen that didn't happen, but, you know, these guys fighting, and not only did they fight each other, they fought each other a couple times, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, throughout all these heavyweight fighters. So, I agree. The 70s, I think it's the best era of all time, but this 90s era is really close.
Well, you know, it's a good segue that you brought up what happened in Tokyo in February of 90, because it was the setup for supposed to be Tyson Holyfield after that, but Buster Douglas, you know, gets the greatest upset in sports history. And then months later, Buster Douglas is overweight, out of shape. He fights Holyfield. Holyfield dismisses him quickly and he's champion. But by the time he gets to 92 and fighting Riddick Bowe, because he didn't beat Iron Mike Tyson, people don't really see him as the real champion. He's not really getting that just due. And this fight against a big, strong Riddick Bowe, you know, who's 6'5", 235, they're feeling like people are saying, I think Evander also feels this fight can legitimize himself as a true heavyweight champion in people's opinion.
Right, because if you look at Holyfield, like, he's not your prototypical heavyweight fighter. He was what, 205 coming into this fight? Like, you know, you can look at the difference, right? Like, between Bowe and Holyfield. And you're also seeing the shift in the heavyweight division where guys are like 6'4, 6'5, you know, 240. Like, now these guys are starting. They're not playing left tackle. Now they're coming into boxing, right? And they're coming in. And, you know, obviously that shifts again when we start seeing, like, the Klitschko's and all that. These are 6'7", you know, like 260. You know, some incredible athletes to be that big and to be able to move in a ring like that. So, yeah, everybody was looking at this fight like, okay. Because it's almost comparable, not as big of, like, the names, but it's like, When Joe Frazier was the heavyweight champion and everybody was saying, oh, he didn't really beat Ali, so he's not really the champion. And it's like people were saying the same thing about Evander Holyfield. So this was the fight, like you said, Jeremy, to put him up there like, yeah, I am the best in the world.
And on the flip side, Riddick Bowe, you know, as a silver medalist in the 88 Olympics in the super heavyweight division, you know, he's working his way up as a heavyweight, but was even a sparring partner for Evander Holyfield. And the thing about Bowe is, has all the natural ability, has all this athletic talent, but does he have the drive to be great? Does he have the stamina, literal stamina, to be great?
Yeah.
Bowe, throughout his career, will battle a weight issue. You know, people say it wasn't drugs, it wasn't booze, it was food for Riddick Bowe. And, you know, his manager, Rock Newman, they decide to bring in the legendary, you know, Eddie Futch trainer. He was a trainer for so many years, so many great fighters, and to have him come in and work with Riddick to get ready to fight Evander.
Right. And, you know, weight issue is it's a tough deal, man. You know what I mean? Like, to be a big guy and, you know, I like to eat. Like, you know, I can definitely relate. I do have that issue as well, where it's like, if I don't be careful with what I eat, like, will blow up. And I think that's everyone, right? But again, like, there's certain individuals like that's just like natural, like, you know what I mean? Like, you eat, like, you want to eat so much, and the next thing you know, like, you know, you're blowing up. Because in boxing, that's one of the worst things you can be, right? Is someone who has all this talent but just throws it away for whatever reason. And you mentioned, like, sometimes it is drugs and alcohol, whatever the case may be, but this one was a little different, right? And again, like, wasted talent, right? You heard that in, like, Bronx Tale. Like, the worst thing to do is be wasted talent. And we were looking at this emergence of Riddick Bowe, but it was just like, is he's going to sustain this? And, you know, in this fight, he came in great shape.
Well, let me ask you before, I know we're going to do our rewatch and watch Bowe Holyfield. But speaking about that, and I'm also a guy, you know, big guy who has that battle as well, so I relate. Do you feel in a sport like boxing, and I know the divisions can make it even different. I think some may say at heavyweight it could be harder or easier than it is for those lighter divisions. But do you feel like that's a fair assessment, though? Like you say, you get that kind of that slogan of lazy, or, you know, like, just not committed. If you battle with your weight in boxing, do you think that's a fair assessment to give? I mean, we can keep it to Riddick Bowe, I guess, but a lot of fighters go through that.
Yeah, I don't think it is. You know what I mean? Like, I, you know, it's like eating disorders are like a real thing. I'm not saying he had an eating disorder, right? But it's just, you know, like, that's a real thing. You know what I mean? Like, to get through. And people always just naturally think like, well, he's a professional fighter. He should be able to, like, just get into shape with no problem. And for some dudes, it's just a tough thing to do, man. There's some people, man, like, you just eat whatever and it just sticks to you. You know what I'm saying? Like, so, that is a tough label to put on anyone, because it's a very hard one to shake also. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? Like, so once it's put on you, no matter, like I said, you, and we'll see it, and they'll talk about it in the commentary here, where, you know, Riddick Bowe is in good shape, you know what I mean, for this fight. And but the question throughout this fight was the stamina. Will he be able to sustain this? Will he be able to sustain this? And that's really tough, because on the other side of the ring, we don't question that. You know what I'm saying? Like, Holyfield was one of the, you know, the most fit looking heavyweights that I've ever seen in my life, right? Like, he was always cut up, perfect shape. Like, he just looked really good. You know what I'm saying? Like, so when you see that on the other side and you see Riddick Bowe come in, you know, it's like, oh, wow. Like, okay, this guy must be working harder. But sometimes that's not the case.
No, and I just bring that up because I don't think you hear more stories about it now and people trying to be more understanding now, but especially back in the day, when you look at boxers or you're a MMA fighter or amateur wrestler, even the hardest part a lot of times they say is getting, you know, weight down and then having to do extreme things to get your weight down. you know, and a lot of times it's very dangerous. And there's a lot of, and from I can go thinking of boxers, but amateur wrestlers, MMA fighters who are great fighters, and you don't question their ability, but it would be a mental breakdown trying to cut weight. And I just look at Bo, you know, if you look at it, Jose, like 235 on a 6'5" frame,
right?
It's not like that's a small, like, you know what I mean? Like,
it's a good dude, weight.
6'5", and like, that's hard. Like, you know, to keep that kind of, to be that like lean at that height. I don't think people talk about, they definitely didn't talk about it then, but no. Even now, like, that's a lot.
That is a lot. And I think 235 for 6'5" it's a nice weight to be at. You know what I mean? Like, it's, but again, I look at it, right? Like, I look at it from a perspective of, like, this dude is 6'5", 235, and he's doing what he's doing. You know what I mean? Like, he's in there fighting how many rounds he's fighting. You know what I mean? Like, and there's some rounds that he takes off, but who does that? What boxer doesn't do that? You know what I'm saying? Like, so, again, my thing is, when you get labeled that, man, you'll hear it in the commentary. Like, they talk about it throughout, man, and that's very unfair.
No, and also what Riddick Bowe is known for, and as time goes on, you'll see more and more, but he has a very colorful manager, Rock Newman, and there's something about Riddick Bowe fights in the 90s that this might be maybe the only one that there's something controversial, outlandish is surrounding Riddick Bowe and his crew in these fights. This Bo Holyfield one might be one of the only big Riddick Bowe fights that kind of is smooth when it comes to the fight. But with Rock Newman and that crew there, Riddick Bowe definitely had a lot of color, a lot of personality around him in the 90s, starting around this time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And there's some memorable issues. There was an issue after this fight there. I mean, we'll see that. But there was a little scuffle between it was someone in his camp and something happened. I don't know. The camera didn't catch it, but something happens here. But like you said, like, there's some interesting stuff. And I was thinking that too. Like, when I think of Riddick Bowe, it's like, I think of Riddick Bowe, I think of like the great fighter, right? I think of Rock Newman, and I think about his camp, like, immediately. Those are the first couple things I think about when I think of Riddick Bowe. So you're right on that, man. His camp was nothing to play with, for sure.
No, and something, you're right. Something happened, but it's really small,
right?
And compared to the other things, and I'll be making this point throughout when we start watching it. Is it's a shame that this should be the first thing you say when you talk about Riddick Bowe, this fight and this performance, but because of the controversy, it sadly isn't.
Right, and again, we're gonna watch it. I haven't watched this in a long time, but I remember watching this when it was live, you know, and I was like, man, this dude, Riddick Bowe, here we go. Like, and he came in, he had a beautiful record already coming into the fight. He was 31-0 with 27 KOs, man. Like, that's a great record. You know what I'm saying? And, mm-hmm. And I was just like, this dude's taking over the heavyweight division. You know what I'm saying? Like, here we go. It's Riddick Bowe time. And we all know how that played out.
So this fight wind up being called the Fight of the Year 92. It's the first they wind up having, the first of the three. This is really, you think of great trilogies, Ali Frazier is one. A lot of people put this, especially for heavyweights, number two.
Yeah.
Time will tell, I guess, when we have Fury and Wilder, how we feel about that, and if that can surpass this one. I don't think so.
He's got to win one.
Right. I don't think so. There's a draw and two losses, so yeah. I don't believe. Like, I wouldn't put it over there, but outside of Ali Frazier, this is like the number two like trilogy in heavyweight boxing for a lot of reasons. And they give you back-to-back fight of the years in 92 with the first one, 93 with the second fight and the infamous Fan Man incident. So, you know, these are just some of the most memorable fights really in boxing history with these two guys.
Right. And to have a trilogy, it's got to go back and forth, right? That's why, I in my opinion, that Wilder Fury, it's, to me, it's shut down because, again, it wasn't, like, that first fight was the best fight. It was a great fight, you know, but then after that it was over. You know what I'm saying? And this trilogy here, and just like the same obviously with Ali Frazier and this one here, these guys were going back and forth. Not only had Fan Man, you had some other issues with Holyfield, you know, and other fights where it's just so much that goes on with these fights. And not only are there great fights, but they're memorable stuff outside, like the ring with Holyfield's heart issue and all that stuff. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's so much. So yeah, we can get going on this, Darren.
Let's cue it up.
Yeah, let's do it, man. I'm ready to go.
We're going back to November of 92, November 13th to be exact, 92. Thomas and Mack Center, that's where UNLV played, you know, running Rebels. So we're in Vegas. But this is a real hyped up fight, and there was a lot on the line here. And Bo is the underdog going into this fight.
Yeah, and he looks great. You know what I'm saying? Like everything we were just talking about, he came into this fight in great shape. You know, he looked good, man. He was ready to go. Look at that, man. 25 years old, 6'5", 235. Again, 31-0, 27 KOs. He was definitely on the rise for sure.
Mm-hmm. And he, someone who grew up with Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
You know, they grew up together. They're in, you know, that Brownsville section of Brooklyn. So they, you know, knew each other and wound up being that when Mike went one way, started robbing and doing his stuff. Riddick Bowe stayed straight and narrow, but started walking his mom to him from the store because he knew Mike was out there
robbing
those old ladies. So,
man, holy cow, man. He was 30. I was surprised he was that old.
Yeah. But yeah, well, he also he was in the Olympics in 84.
Yep. But 205, man, he was small, man. And to and you think about Holyfield and like the warrior, right? Like that's the nickname. But and he was 100% a warrior. But to do that at that size with these guys, man, again, he's going in there. He was fighting pretty close three times. He just fought Foreman, you know what I'm saying? Like right before this fight. So Foreman obviously was a big dude, man. There was so many big guys. Lennox Lewis, like there were so many big dudes in the heavyweight division that for him to be that small and to do his thing, because he did his thing, man. My hat always went out to Holyfield because he was a true great fighter.
Yeah, he you know had been a cruiserweight. People looked at him more as a cruiserweight, as a light heavyweight. Has the height at 6'2", not bad height, but just yeah, naturally wasn't that big. And you know, Holyfield's a classic counterpuncher, and that's his style, which isn't really, I guess, the best necessarily, you would think, when you're going up against the guys, the sizes you were naming, Jose, at 6'4", 6'5". You know, they got you by 30, 40 pounds. Not always the best to be a counterpuncher, but it did work for Evander.
Yeah, and you can see, like, you know, at first, these guys come out, and they, you know, feeling each other out, like most fights, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, these guys are trying to box a little bit, but that quickly shifts, like, in this round, and it's going to be, after that, it just becomes such a great fight, man. But, you know, one thing I give Holyfield, Jeremy, real quick, he was not scared to trade punches, man. He would stay in there, man, with those short hooks. He, man, like, you see a lot of that in this fight, for sure.
For sure, and I, you know, it's key. I said earlier that Bo was a sparring partner for Holyfield, so Holyfield goes in there not feeling, you know, which can hurt somebody when you get too comfortable. I know this guy,
right?
And knowing that Riddick Bo would always tire out, he couldn't go. So I feel like there was an overconfidence in Evander, thinking same old Riddick, he'll tire out, and I'll be able to get him in the later rounds. And that wasn't the case in this fight at all.
No, not at all. Bo, again, came in amazing shape. He looks great. Like, to me, he looks great, man. That 235, he's carrying that very well, man. And that jab, man, he had a great jab. And that, he was definitely putting that out on display today in this fight, for sure.
Right. And you see early on, there's, you know, Holyfield likes to counterpunch, likes to give those combinations and kind of wear down the bigger fighter. Looking like Evander likes to go kind of side to side and move on these big guys. But, you know, Riddick with that right hand and also those body punches, which, you know, I think for people who are just casual fans, and also especially if you've never been in the ring or even sparred or getting hit, people look at those, you know, we all look at the big headshots, the big knockouts and ooh, ooh, ooh. But what really wears on fighters is it's those body shots.
Yeah, and not only those body shots, but you're 100% right there, I mean, but when these big guys just lean on you the whole fight, that shit is, it takes a toll on you, man. Like, and you'll see, like, throughout the fight, Holyfield, like, you know, these two clinch up, Holyfield pushing him off, and you know, you do that for 45 minutes, man. Like, that's, and you're throwing punches, and this dude is just leaning on you and leaning on you. It, that, and you add body shots, and you add that this dude is catching you with other shots too, man. And it's like, that's tough to deal with for a whole fight.
Absolutely, and that's where, you know, the conditioning of these fighters, like, you know, I honestly, best athletes in the world, honestly, in my opinion, are these guys, because if you've never done it, and I've done it a few times, I'm not saying I'm a lot, I sparred a little bit, but just, you look at it, like, how sore and tired your arms are, because you're getting hit on your arms, at the same time you're throwing punches, and you have to keep repeating, it's hard to even raise your arms up, like, after you do that, so it's something else. So we got the first round done here, and in my opinion, looking back on it, maybe in the moment you don't know it, but looking back on it now, you kind of can tell the way Bo was sharp with that jab, that, like, it's a different Riddick Bo than what Evander was used to.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, he had it all together tonight, man. And it was Jim Lampley, George Foreman were doing the fight. And Foreman, I mentioned, like, Holyfield came into this fight with a bunch of Vaseline on his face, right? That he was surprised that, you know, the ref let that, you know, especially for the first round, let that stay on there. But he was saying he knew he did that because they knew that he was going to have to deal with that jab from Riddick Bowe. And he's like, you know, he did a great job in this fight. And he just kept saying Riddick Bowe needs to just throw that jab and he's going to be all right. But you saw at the end of that first round, it was like 30 seconds left and these guys started trading shots. And I think that's when this fight shifted. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I like how you talked about it there. I mean, like, you knew this was, you know, Riddick Bowe was going to give him a problem in this fight, man. And in this round here, you know, towards the end, we'll see. Like, he hits Holyfield with a shot, man. And if if that round was longer, this might have been over in the second round. But, you know, but Bo came out, man. He looked great.
And it's something you see, like, where Holyfield's trying to get those combos, but Riddick is really, he's hitting him in the body. You keep seeing it. It's not even really talked about as much, but those body shots are coming in.
These dudes are throwing shots now, man. They're throwing bombs.
And they're throwing bombs. But Holyfield's not affecting Riddick. He's not really hitting. He's not really connecting on. He's throwing a lot of punches, but they're not really effective punches.
Right. Right. And Bo's catching him. You know what I'm saying? Like, and you can tell some of those shots, they just immediately stopped Holyfield in his tracks. That's a big dude, man. 235 hitting you, man. That's got to be a lot of power.
And that's what he was at the weigh-in. So, you know, a lot of times at the weigh-in, you're this, right, and then you.
These dudes people getting 6-7 pounds, man, in right, 2 days.
So I'm willing to say that's really at fight night 240 to 245. Especially knowing, like we said, everybody has a different body frame. Bo's right. Body frame, you know, he's not a – I mean, I think later on in his life he's a heavier guy. But a lot of times it's like if you saw Riddick Bo, even when they said he's out of shape, to the common man, he's not out of shape.
Right.
You know, it's just for boxing, he was.
Right. And then you're starting to see, like, Riddick Bowe is landing these uppercuts inside. And throughout the fight, man, like, that becomes a real issue for Holyfield. For some reason, he just couldn't deal with a lot of those uppercuts. In the inside, you would think, like, Holyfield would have that advantage inside from being a smaller dude.
When you're watching Riddick Bowe, Jose, do you think this is more of – this is the guy that he could have been, or is it like he just pitched, you know, like you have like a pitcher will pitch a perfect game. They're just on fire that one night. Was he just on fire this night? Or do you think like this is what he really could have kept up?
Yeah, I think this is what we should have seen like throughout. And I'm not saying, you know, you were talking about some of the labels that were placed on him, but I just think this was like at his hungriest peak, right? He's fighting for the heavyweight title. He wanted that belt, and he put it all together tonight. And I don't think this was like a one and done thing. Like I've seen him put some other fights together as well. Now is this the best? And that's the right hand right there. If this round would have kept going, this fight would have been over. But no, I think this was peak Bo. you know, but I don't think this was just a one and done thing. I think
because sometimes
we should have saw this for sure.
Because some guys, as you know, you talked about in our last episode, and you mentioned him early. Buster pitched a perfect game that night against Mike Tyson. That wasn't Buster Douglas. Like, that's right. Not the guy we were going to be. Even if he would have stayed in shape the next fight, we're not going to be getting that guy. Like, that was like a one-time thing. So that's why I kind of ask, like, because to me, this is the best I see of Bo.
Yeah.
Like, definitely for the rest of his career, he doesn't look as sharp in so many ways as he does this night.
Yeah, this was his best fight, I believe. And he looked great. You know what I'm saying? Like, he looked great tonight, but you know, I've seen him put together a couple other fights where he was dominant, but nothing like this though. I think if he would have kept this for throughout his career, he would have been one of the greats.
Do you think Rick Bo like this? Do you think he beats? Because to me, the question would be Lennox Lewis, who's his height, his size. Do you think Riddick Bowe, if he, not like what we got, but if he's fighting like this and you get Lennox Lewis at his best, do you think Bowe beats Lennox Lewis?
That's tough. That's a tough one. I really like Riddick Bowe. I was a big Riddick Bowe fan, but Lennox Lewis, man, like he, which is a fight, and we talked about it at that, on, you know, on our Nanny's Heavyweight episode, which is a fight, man, that we did not get an opportunity to see, but I'd still have Lennox Lewis winning that fight.
It's interesting. It's interesting. It is interesting.
It's definitely, it would have been an amazing fight for sure. Two big guys like that. Man, and they were both at their primes, you know, around this era.
And, you know, you're watching in this third, and Bo is really, like you said, he's leaning on him, and he's getting effective. He's getting some good, so even some good power punches to the head he's getting with Holyfield here. But Evander went away from the strategy, too, now, like, to keep moving. And he, like you said, that warrior mentality, which people loved about Evander and made him exciting, it also bites him in the ass in a few fights. And to me, this one in particular, like, he's trying to throw toe-to-toe with a guy who's 40 pounds heavier, 3 inches taller.
5 years younger. You know what I'm saying?
5 years younger, correct.
So, and maybe a little more talented. You know what I'm saying? Like, if Bo puts everything together, Holyfield puts everything together, I like Riddick Bo. You know what I'm saying? And I think this was a prime example of that. But he was taking some shots, man. And a dude this big. And you mentioned it earlier, and I'm glad you talked about the body work, because, you know, throughout this fight, you'll hear Joe Cortez, like, telling him to keep it up. Even those lower shots, like, they obviously do damage. So he was hitting them with – he had everything working tonight. Well, this night.
Mm-hmm.
And now Holyfield is just standing right in front of him. You know what I'm saying? And that's what you do not want to be.
And you're also, if you look at it, Holyfield already looks like the eye is swelling up. Like,
right.
He's, and we're in the third round, you know, with 30 seconds left in it, but it's, or no, 12 seconds left 12 in
seconds,
it.
12 seconds, yeah.
But it's like he's taking some shots early. Like, that's, and I really do think, like, it was Riddick Bowe's night, but Evander just went to being stubborn and being like, I know this guy. He's not really this guy. I'm going to impose my will on him, and it was the wrong mistake.
Yeah, and then you also got to think about, you know, we were talking about Holyfield being, like, at 205, right, one of the lighter heavyweights, man. Like, you know, for you to be that small, you better have a ton of power, you know what I mean? And I'm not saying Holyfield didn't have power, but, you know, when you're going up against these huge dudes, man, like, his power was not that strong to just knock these guys, like, to go toe-to-toe with these guys like this and knock them out. Like, he had power. Don't get me wrong. He knocked out some dudes. But, like, I think the game plan they went into the fight where he was fighting in the first round, I think would have worked out better. But obviously would have worked out better. But standing in front and going and trading shots with dudes like this, you just can't do that at that size.
Let me ask you, because I feel like, by the time they fight the first time, Tyson and Holyfield, it's 4 years later, mm-hmm. and it's you know, 5 to 6 years after they were supposed to fight, do you think Holyfield at this point in, you know, early 90s beats early 90s Mike Tyson if they would have fought?
It's a great question. But you also, I have to take in consideration a few things, right? Like, you know, because Tyson lost to Buster Douglas. Why? Because, one, he trained like shit. You know, he really didn't care about the fight. Now, does that stay the same when he fights Holyfield? If that does stay the same, I think Holyfield wins that fight, right? If you get, like, a motivated and in shape and, you know, Mike Tyson, I think Mike can take him. You know what I'm saying? Like, but you mentioned it, Holyfield being a counterpuncher, and these dudes, again, man, throwing shots.
Throwing, like, big shots.
Yeah, yeah. I think the style of how Holyfield fought would have always given Tyson a lot of trouble. What do you think?
I agree. I think they were two different fighters, and Mike was a totally different fight by the time they actually fight.
Yeah.
I think if Mike had his head on straight, I think if Mike could have gotten him, which would have been hard, but by like the sixth or seventh round, Mike, if Mike can knock him out, he's good. If they go into later rounds, I feel Evander would have had him, just because Mike, to me, wasn't built to go long.
Right.
So I think, like, I do agree. I think Mike would have done better in the early 90s than he did when he fought him later in the 90s. But I do think, you know, that's what makes boxing great. Styles make matchups. And I think, you know, it's funny because my second question to you, I think Holyfield's style would have given Mike trouble. But then I feel like Bo's style always would give Evander trouble, where I feel like Mike would have done better against Bo than Evander would have.
I don't know. Like, you know, because I think you talked about Buster Douglas, and, like, that was kind of like the blueprint. I think Riddick Bowe could have fought that same exact fight against Mike Tyson and done really well. Now, the only thing that I would say to your example, man, like, they're hitting each other with everything.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, I don't think, and it obviously, Tyson has more power than Evander Holyfield. So I think there, you know, if Mike gets inside and they trade shots, that's going to be a big problem for Riddick Bowe. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think he can survive that. But if he doesn't do that and keeps him in the outside and, you know, all that, I think Bowe could also beat Tyson. So I just think it's dependent on what they do that night.
I think Mike, because obviously, like you said, Mike almost won that fight against Buster, and he went, I mean, completely half-assed. He wasn't thinking about nothing.
He's with Bobby Brown the night
before. Yeah, and exactly. And he still almost won that fight with that in the eighth round against Buster with that uppercut.
And people say that was a 10 count, and they started counting that late. So
I don't think so, though.
I don't think so either. I don't think so either, but
people, I got into an argument at the gym a few weeks ago with a guy talking about our podcast, and I was talking about that we were going to be doing these fights, and we started talking about heavyweights in the 90s, and one guy was like, oh, yeah, Buster, he had a 13 count, and then two other guys chime in saying that, and I go, all three of y'all are wrong. What the hell are you talking about? I don't know, 13 count. And I go, you see, Buster's not even hurt. He's just frustrated that, like, damn, I got cocky. I go, Buster would have bounced back, like, even though 13 count. So I disagree with those dudes. And they said they'd be listening to the show, so I hope they hear us and know y'all still dead-ass wrong on that one. And they know who they are, too. When I see them in the gym, I let them know. But I think Mike, just at his peak in his prime with that, you know, peekaboo style and how he got low with that. Mike was an underrated as the thing. Oh, guys,
he,
like,
he was a great defender.
You know, guys like him and Duran, because we love their that kinetic energy and that, like, that this excitement, we overlooked that their defense was great. And I think Bo would have had a hard time with a crouching Mike at that height. And then Mike get on the inside. Oh, yeah. And then Mike on that inside, I think he would have rocked Riddick. I really do.
especially if he tries to go blow for blow. Because what we find out later on in Tyson's career is Tyson had a great chin, too. He was taking some shots from a lot of guys, man. With Lennox Lewis fight, he was taking a tremendous beating, man. And then he finally gets knocked out. Like, Mike could take a punch, man. We just didn't know at this time yet because we didn't see anybody really hit Mike with a lot of stuff. I mean, obviously, what Buster Douglas did was a total domination, and eventually he caved under that. But, you know, but these two guys here, man, like, I think they both, we all know what Holyfield did with Tyson, but I just think Riddick Bowe, man, that would have been a very interesting fight.
No,
Holyfield's working inside now. He's catching Bowe with some hooks.
And this fight's real interesting to me because a lot of times in boxing, a great fight is like a back and forth who's going to win, where this is, to me, a great fight. I feel like Bo is always in control. Like, he's always leading on points. You're always giving it to him. But Holyfield's giving him heart, and it's like a warrior's mentality. And just knowing that Holyfield, it could turn at any point. He gives him enough combos and good shots where you go, is it going to turn? But never, in my opinion, never really, besides, I guess, that infamous 10th round at the end, never really turns for Holyfield, in my opinion. But it's still a great fight.
Yeah, he definitely had his moments, for sure. And it's like each round, you know, you saw something from Holyfield. Holyfield hit him with a couple shots. You know, we've been mentioning how they've been going toe-to-toe. So it's like you, as a fan, you know what Holyfield's capable of at this point of his career. And you're like, all right, when is this? Not only just that, like, you know, you're waiting for Holyfield to kind of just take over the fight. But at this point in our fandom, right, with Riddick Bowe, we're also waiting for that shoe to drop of Riddick Bowe. It's like, right, can he keep this up? And it's just like you're constantly like, oh, here it is. And then Bowe takes it to another level. So,
because this is, I think, as far as the fight, people talk about this fight the most, like, as far of the trilogy. But I think the most competitive of the three was the fight, the second fight the next year. Very back and forth. Was probably, you know, a potential future episode, you know, for us. You know, that's another great fight, and there's a lot of great stuff with that. You know, outside the ring, some of the best shots were outside the ring in that second fight, you know. So,
With a walkie-talkie and stuff.
With some walkie-talkies and just they, you know, you don't play with certain people. But that fight to me was more who is winning. It's a back and forth. Like, if you're checking the scorecard, me and you were like watching it together back in 93, and we're like, who you got now? Like, that fight had more of that than this fight, in my opinion.
Right. This was a quiet, I'm not going to say both dominated. I can't go there. But he was, like you mentioned earlier, he was in control this whole time. You know what I'm saying? Like, and again, Holyfield had his glimpses and moments in this fight. And honestly, like, each round. But you always felt there. I mean, I'm glad you said that earlier. Like, you always felt like Bo was in control of this fight. And if you look at punches thrown, Bo was almost over 100 punches. Then Holyfield threw 5 rounds. Like, you don't expect that in a fight like this. So, again, he's putting it all together tonight.
Is this a great fight? And we're in, you know, we're not there yet, but is this really a good fight that has a great round? We're in round 6, and round 10 is the infamous round. But in your opinion, is this a good fight that has a great round? Or would you call Bo Holyfield one a great fight?
No, I think this is a great fight because, again, okay, so what do you need in a great fight, right? Like, you need action, right?
Yeah.
Constant action. And I felt like you got that here in this fight. Every round there was a moment in there where these two dudes are throwing. You know, we've been in communication, but we've been talking throughout this fight. And it's like, oh, man, they're throwing some shots. Like, that's constantly, we keep doing that. And I think, one, you need that in a great fight for sure. And two, it's like, for me, and you talked about action and all that, like, to me, this fight was action packed, and it's, again, round after round after round, and you're just waiting for the great fighter to kind of take over. And when you see the younger fighter who's ascending, like, level up, to me, that's always like a great sign, like a sign of a great fight. And then you obviously had that 10th round where it's just, was one of the best rounds. And you add all that up to me, I think this is a great fight.
No, I agree. It's I think it's just an interesting thing, because if someone, if you can't call it's a really good fight. If someone were to call it a good fight, I wouldn't be like, you're crazy. You know what right. I mean? Like, I can right. see why they call it that as well. But I think you're right. I would put it in the great category. If the 10th round doesn't happen, I might say it's a really good fight.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I do think the 10th round makes it a great fight.
Yeah, it puts it over the top.
Yeah.
Yeah, this 6th round was a good round, too. These guys now, man, they're yeah, and you could see it, Bo just leaning on him and leaning on him and leaning on him. And that, after a while, that's a nice combination there, too. That's going to tie you out, man.
And it, who would have thought going it, if we go back to the fall of 92, that Holyfield would be the one losing stamina before Riddick Bo? Like, no one was going to say that back then. But that's what we're having here. Due to all the things that you're pointing out, Jose, Holyfield is looking. You see some swelling around the eyes. It's getting even more. But also you're seeing he is gasping for air.
Yep. And then now, you know, from, you know, all these shots that he's taking, he's trying to stay on the outside. And now he's in range for that one, you know, that left jab and that right, you know, cross, like from Riddick Bo. And you look, you know, round 6, you know, Holyfield's throwing 36 punches. Riddick Bo throwing 54. You know what I mean? So he's throwing a whole lot more. And you can look at, you know, Riddick Bo's face, for those listening on the podcast, like, you know, his face is, you know, he might have a little bit of swelling, but he looks perfectly fine, you know. And if you look at Holyfield's, you know, that right eye is starting to close up a little bit. And again, that's from that jab, that beautiful jab that Riddick Bo had.
No, and it's something. We also got to give credit to the both. You got two all-time great trainers.
Yep.
For both guys, Lou Duva, rest in peace, was in the Holyfield camp, and then late great Eddie Futch is there with Riddick Bo. So these guys are getting some. They're both are Hall of Famers themselves, so they're getting some great, you know, training in there, some great, you know, coaching by these guys. So it's just a lot of greatness in this ring in November 13th of 92.
Yeah, and you can hear Lou Duva in the corner there talking about, you got to start throwing some more punches, you know. And Holyfield comes out and he's bouncing around a little bit, again, side to side like he was trying to do in the first round. But again, now he's in target. You know, he's in that target range of that left jab. Oh, man, he just...
Wait, now, a great right hook by Riddick Bo.
Yeah, and then every time Holyfield backs up, he comes with that 1-2 combination. It's just, at this point, at this point, if you're Evander Holyfield, like, what do you do? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Everything you're trying to do, this guy is still hitting you everywhere you go.
And that's the truth. Like, and that's why sometimes, you know, you can make that case. A lot of times, it's hard for a fighter to be in that zone where it's like they have an answer for everything for an opponent. But Riddick did that night. That's why I think it's a good conversation. Like, of did Riddick just pitch a perfect game that night, or was this the guy he could have been? Because if he could have been this guy, we're looking at an all-time great heavyweight. We're looking at, to me, if Riddick Bo could have had a 4 or 5 year run like this, of like on this caliber. I'm just going 4 or 5 years. It could, maybe if you go longer, we're looking at possibly a top five heavyweight.
Right, and I think that's where the disappointment comes in, where you see something like this. I don't think after that Buster Douglas Tyson fight, I'm like, okay, like Buster Douglas has figured it out, and he's going to go on this run. I didn't feel that way.
No.
Kid, but this here, I mean, again, Bo has 31 fights at this point. It's not like, you know, he's just coming out of the Olympics. You know, he's 31-0, 27 KOs, like. But he's 25 years old, and I'm seeing this, and I'm like, all right, like, this is now the expectation. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is – now you have to become the best fighter in the world, and the big disappointment is – and you touched on it a little bit earlier, Jeremy, where, you know, when we started the episode, it didn't continue. And I think that's where a lot of fans were just really frustrated, seeing this type of talent, and it was just, you only saw it for a short period of time. Now, I know he fought Galata and stuff, like, he looked pretty good, but Galata was whooping his ass too, you know. And, you know, he has some other good fights, but this is peak Riddick Bo, and if he could have continued this, that's a Hall of Fame type career.
Absolutely. No. And we're looking at Riddick, how great he's looking. This is the seventh round. And you're right. Lou Duva had told him in between the rounds, Evander, to start throwing more punches, which means, like you said, going side to side, bouncing back and forth. It's just hard, though, when he started taking those. That's what made him stop. He started taking those shots and started going toe-to-toe with him. So then Lou's telling him the right thing, but then you have to just, you know, like Mike Tyson said that quote, everyone's got a plan till you get hit in the mouth. And Evander got hit, and then that kind of side-to-side went away. Like, so it was tough to keep that up. Like, and that to me is also what shows, you know, great fighters is being able. I mean, it's in all sports, but fighters, you know, you're one-on-one in there. So, and it, you know, MMA as well, too, when you can adjust strategy and roll with the punches and pivot that game plan you have, because a lot of times, like, okay, like the strategy you set up, we all got film and all that. So you're watching it and it's not bad, but then just like tonight or like this night, hey, the guy is ready. He's in better shape. He's doing things. He's adjusted himself as well. What are you going to do as a fighter then? When that strategy kind of goes out the window and you got to pivot, and that's what makes a great fighter, in my opinion.
Right, right. And, you know, you're going to go to what you know, right? And for Holyfield's case, it's him trading shots with these guys. And, you know, now, man, now you got Rick Bo bouncing around. This is the eighth round, you know, and it's got to be scary, though, for a fighter, right? Like, you know, you came in, you've been training for 6 months, right? 6-7 months, and you know, you were hoping, you knew you were getting this one fighter, and then it comes out and he's a completely, it's a different machine, man. And he's putting it all together, and your game plan is out the window, and you know you can't trade shots with this guy. You may think you may not be able to knock him out. It's got to be a scary spot for a fighter.
And there's also, to be fair for Holyfield, there's the ring psychology of it. So we're in the eighth now, but then he can still think, well, if I hold on a little bit, maybe he is tiring out, right? Until you start seeing how Bo is fighting. So, like, the round starts and Bo's bouncing up and down. A lot of times it is psychology in there. You know, we look at the physical of fighting, but it's the mental. And it's like, hey, you could be hurt, you could be tired, but you're not going to show that to your opponent if you can, you know, kind of getting that head. Now, obviously, when the action is going in these rounds, then you're kind of getting an idea, like, okay, no, he's still got zip in there. So that changes. But I can still see Evander probably thinking, this guy's got to tire out. He's big. I know him. He's got to slow down. He's going to tire out eventually.
Yeah, he's also throwing a lot of punches. So that's like a recipe for like a later round. Like, you can kind of take over there. But, you know, Holyfield in this fight, you can see him at this point now is bouncing around. But you look, man, and that looks like he's tired. You know what I mean? Like, he just looks, there's a difference, right? Like, there's a difference of like bouncing around and looking sharp. Then there's a difference of like, you're just trying to like act like you're not tired and trying to psych the other boxer out. But you can tell the way he's bouncing in there, shoulders are like slumping, his head is back, and he just looks really tired.
And he's trying to throw haymakers, but, you know, Riddick's doing a good job defensively as well. And he's moving. He's getting out of the way of those shots, especially for a big guy.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a nice headbutt in there. And that was another thing throughout Holyfield's career where, you know, him trying to fight inside a lot, which he did a great job. And there's a lot of times when he clashed heads, and they just clashed heads now. And it looks like Brady Bowles, like, you know, his right eye's bothering him a little bit.
Well, you know, in the infamous Holyfield Tyson 2, where Mike bites the ears, Mike says he's getting frustrated by those headbutts. Though, like, it happened in the first fight, and then that second fight, you know, these headbutts keep coming. I believe Mills Lane was the ref in that fight too.
Yep.
And he's like frustrated, wanting to call these headbutts, and he, you know, Mike was a loose cannon in that ring, so not excusing the bites at all, but that's what, speaking to what you said about the headbutts, you know, Mike was saying he's getting headbutt by Evander and he's getting on his nerves. And also, he wasn't doing his thing against Evander. Evander was fighting a great fight, too.
Yeah.
And he couldn't get in there on him, but he said the headbutt started getting on him.
Right. So what HBO was doing, for those who are just listening on the podcast, they're showing you know, fight that he had the year before. No, it might have been that same, no, the same year in June against Larry Holmes, right? Against Larry Holmes. And again, Larry Holmes was past his prime at this point, but
way
past. Yeah, like you're still looking at what the impact was the jab. Obviously, we all know about Larry Holmes' jab, how great that was, and it was the same thing. His Evander Holyfield's right eye was nice and swollen, you know, when he was fighting Larry Holmes. And you're looking at this fight here, same exact difference. You know, like you got you got Riddick Bowe hitting him with that jab. Holyfield's right eye is again swollen up. So they're just kind of making like a correlation there of like, this is looks like the same fight, you know what I mean? Like Holyfield's having trouble with this. And at this point now, Holyfield's left eye has a cut. So he's getting beat down, man, at this point.
Yeah. And Riddick sticks to those body punches really well. That people highlight the jab, which is, Riddick had a great jab this night. But those body shots also, you can't underestimate or overlook how those, to me, are the key that really wore. And when you take those body shots, no matter how quick of a fighter you are and how much you bounce around, if someone's landing effective body shots to you, you will slow down. You take a shot to the head, you may not get someone to slow down, but you get those body shots, no matter, I don't care who you are, you're slowing down.
Right, and like it's well known, right? If you're watching the rewatch of a great boxing match, you kind of know this already, but you know, people go to the body, right? And what happens, you start trying to defend that body and you start lowering your hands a little bit and you're opening up top, you know, and I'm not saying that's happening here, because I think Holyfield was getting hit with a lot of shots early on as well. But now you had that to add to everything else we've been talking about, right? With like the fatigue factor and all that. You got this guy, man, just humming on all cylinders.
No, and I think that's the biggest thing, because Evander's a guy with great endurance, can move. You know, his speed's a factor, like him being smaller than these other heavyweights. I think the number one, the other fact, like you said, Bo leaning on it, but the number one factor, Bo was very effective in the body, especially early on in the fight, and that's why Evander, I think, quickly went away from bouncing around, going side to side, as he was taking these shots inside, on the body from Riddick Bowe.
Yep. And then afterwards, a nice combination there, right? And then
by Holyfield, yeah.
Yeah, and then after, you know, you're getting hit with these body shots, and every time Holyfield gets inside, that's exactly what Riddick Bowe was doing. He's just going right to the body. So then you can see, like, Holyfield doesn't want to stay inside to get hit with those body shots, and then he's in range for that 1-2 again. So no matter where Holyfield is standing in front of Riddick Bowe, it's an issue somewhere.
And we got 20 seconds of the ninth round before we get to the legendary 10th round of this fight here, so we'll see how this ninth one, you know, we're wrapping it up.
Yeah, and again, throwing shots. Pretty cool with a couple big shots there. And there goes that uppercut when they were tied in together, which is going to become a factor again in the next couple of rounds.
Do you really? Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it just looks like when they get inside together, if he's not going to the body, Holyfield is kind of like relaxing a little bit, leaving himself open for that uppercut. But and again, it's going to play a big factor soon.
Do you feel, watching, you know, now we're rewatching it, is Evander really winning a round? I don't think he's like really getting killed, like it's 7-10 or 8-10s, but I feel like throughout the fight, it's 10-9 at least. Riddick Bowe, he might get it, you know.
Yeah, I haven't seen him win a round since maybe, I don't even know. Like, to be honest, maybe the first one you give it to him, I'm not sure.
Yeah, it was close. But
shutout. It's been a shutout ever since, you know. And Riddick Bowe's feeling himself, man. He's like doing stuff to the camera right now, and you know he's feeling pretty good. And he knows he's got this fight if he just continues doing what he's doing.
And here we got the legendary 10th round starting here.
Yeah, but again, like there goes that uppercut again, you know, and that jab right there almost dropped him. That had to be a solid jab.
And the crowd starts getting, you said that jab is rocking Evander, and his legs are looking wobbly already.
There goes that
and that uppercut.
Yeah.
That right uppercut, Holyfield, like he's ready to go.
Yeah. Now you got exhaustion adding on top of this dude. Just whooping your ass.
Bowe is trying, and he's missing some, but he's getting a lot in there too. And I don't understand how Holyfield survives this.
Yeah, and the thing is, he's not only going up top, but he's very smart and going to the body as well, man. But when you have a flurry like this, even though you're about to knock this guy out, what happens most of the time, especially with a big guy in the 10th round, get tired out. And now you got Holyfield, got his little bit, got a little bit of separation there. He's got his, like...
That's why he's going toward him, I feel, to try to get that clinch and hold on. And credit to Joe Cortez, because I think another referee maybe would have stopped that flurry by Bo. Like, stopped the fight and ended it.
Yeah, but I think, you know, you got Holyfield at the other, you know, on the other side of that, and you know what he's all about.
But that's what I'm saying. I think another fighter might have gotten that fight stopped, taking the punishment he was taking and not really – he wasn't throwing anything back. He's just taking it and trying – he's just going forward, trying to lean on him.
So Holyfield looks like now at this point he's kind of got his stuff together, but he looks tired. You know, and but he's trying to land that right hand.
He's getting that jab going there, and he's getting. What a warrior. Unbelievable. And he's getting big shots on him.
Yeah, now he's. Now you can see Bo's obviously tired from that big time flurry that he had, almost knocking Holyfield out. Holyfield's taking advantage of that. It's hitting him with some short hooks in the inside, and he's doing some damage for sure.
And the Thomas and Mack Center is going crazy, and you know they're watching a historic round. They know that. 204. This is an amazing show, guys. I
don't think he can win the fight at this rate. But recovered from that beating. Yeah, Holyfield. He was a warrior, man. That was a perfect nickname for him.
It doesn't make any sense how he's able to not only maintain and survive that's the credit in itself. Then to get offense and then to get Riddick Bowe. This is the biggest threat Riddick Bowe has in the fight is in the same round that Riddick Bowe is ready, looking like he's ready to knock him out in.
Yep. And at the end, if this round was another 40, 50 seconds, Bowe would be in big time trouble, man. Because at this point, you know, bell rings, they still throwing punches. At that point, man, Holyfield had him shaky there at the end there.
Yeah. And, you know, I love at the end of that round, Bowe pats Holyfield on the stomach because he knows he was just in there with a warrior and that he maintained and survived that. So it's one of the great rounds in boxing history, that round 10 between Bowe and Holyfield, and Bowe Holyfield won.
Damn, he rocked him with that uppercut, though, man.
It was powerful.
Great combination, like a Mike Tyson, like right hook to the body, same right hand with the uppercut.
Yeah, Holyfield, right uppercut.
Yeah, Holyfield again, kind of lazy inside. And Bowe finally caught him. And I don't know how he doesn't fall there.
He was saved by the ropes.
Yeah. Now let's take a look at Holyfield coming back. But look, you can see Bowe holding on to the back of the head of Holyfield's, you know, the back of Holyfield's head. He's tired, man. You know, and Holyfield took advantage of that for sure and caught him with probably his best shots.
So, it is, you know, you heard Jim, if you know, people watching with us on YouTube or listening to the podcast, Jim Lampley said Riddick Bowe, the 10th round, that's the furthest he had ever gone in a professional fight. So this is the farthest Riddick Bowe has gone in a fight. It would, you know, for this championship level fight, that's very impressive that he's never been this far before, but looking that great and that sharp.
And he hit him with that left and almost knocked his head off. So at this point, you know, so I wanted to ask you about this knockdown, Jeremy. But
the rabbit punch.
Right, that left hand did most of the damage because as soon as he got hit with that left hand, it just stopped everything Holyfield was doing. But hit him in the back of the head there.
Yeah, it's a rabbit punch. So I'm always anti. You can't, you know, in the moment, Joe Cortez, great referee, didn't see it. Yeah. And it counts as a knockdown, but it's not a knockdown. Now, he did wobble him, but the punch that made Holyfield go down was the punch, that rabbit punch to the back of the head, which is an illegal punch. Now it was then, it had been for many years back in 92.
So the argument I remember some people having was that, you know, when Bowe threw the punch, Holyfield turned around. You know what I mean? Like, so I don't know if it was because, again, like he was just that left hook that he got hit with right before that was a devastating shot. I don't know if he just still wasn't all there, and again, he just turned his head, but either way, I think they could have not counted that as a knockdown. Because at this point, now you're looking at a 10-8 round.
I see. I feel, yeah, rabbit punch to me. I can't count that. I wouldn't count. Because like you said, in a fight with the points, like that goes. So when you get a knockdown, that goes to a 10-8, and that hurts you. So to me, and I don't think that would have made a difference in the fight. You know, right. If it's a 10-9 fight still, but in a general scheme of boxing, that really does hurt you then when you have those 10-8 rounds. And right. That, you know.
Yeah, if it was a closer fight, now your strategy is you have to adjust. It can be different. I got to knock this dude out now at this point. Can't make up for that. It's tough to make up for that.
And you're looking –
these dudes are tired, man.
Yeah, you see Bo even looking it too. And Evander's fighting just with courage at this point, really. And you give him credit. He's going out on his shield and – it's a thing that we've seen many times. You know, we saw it with Ali even after the, you know, he gets his first loss to Joe Frazier. We see it with Ray Leonard when he loses to Duran in that first fight. You almost get more respect as a fighter losing with courage than you did when you were winning fights. You know, it's an interesting dynamic. But Holyfield losing this fight, and he winds up losing the fight, gets the respect that he really never had gotten before with a loss.
Yeah, and he didn't look good going into the corner there, but here's a knockdown again. Like, yeah, it was literally in the back of the head.
No, it shouldn't be counted as a knockdown. Seriously hurt
Holyfield. And I would love to replay that left hook that he hit. I think he's not there, man. Hey, come on, your left, John. You got to do it. Careers on
this guy. Clear. No, so it's but it was counted as a, it should not have been, but it was counted as a knockdown. And we're going into the 12th and final round here. And it, like you said earlier, I agree, it counts as a great fight because the action was there. We have a legendary round. Round 10 still is talked about from fight fans to this day because of how great it was. But Riddick Bowe's in control from round 1 through round 12. He went in there and he took the title this night.
Yep, and that's what you got to do. That's exactly what you're supposed to do. So we're here round 12. The dudes touched up, man, like as they should. Yeah, Holyfield would have to knock him out in this round to win the fight. He's definitely down on all scorecards. Okay, champ. I have Riddick Bowe in a commanding
6-point lead. So Harold Letterman says he has him in a commanding 8-3, and that could be a little generous, maybe, honestly.
Yeah. Seems to understand that he would need a knockout.
He does not seem to have the ammunition to go after. But Riddick doing a good job here. Yeah, I like that he's not just knowing, you know, especially after going through round 10 and the war that was in that round, that you can't just sit back like we've seen other fighters do in some classic fights, just sitting back being like, I'm ahead on points. Yep. And I'm just going to coast in this round. Riddick is still on that jab. And he's not, you can tell, he's just trying to keep him off base. So, like, Evander can't come in for that knockout.
Yeah, that jab is devastating, man.
You can see he's throwing in this round with the left hand. So he can hit you with the right or the left with that jab. And at 6'5 in that reach, it's really tough, man. You know,
yeah.
One of the underrated things, I mean, that I feel like if you're a fight fan, you know this, and you always hear about the reach. But I think people who don't follow fighting and start talking about it, people don't realize that when you have a wingspan, it is such a powerful tool. And, like, you can't teach that to people. It's just you have it or you don't.
Right. Wingspan with power, man. It's a perfect combination that you would want in a fighter, especially a heavyweight. And Riddick Bowe definitely had that and some. And he put it all in display tonight, and he used it perfectly against Holyfield in this fight, keeping him outside even when they were inside, where Holyfield, we all thought, was going to be able to do some damage. He was going to the body, was really breaking Holyfield down, and then, and I felt like in the later rounds the jab was even became even more of like a weapon and a tool. That 1-2 with the right after it was just something Holyfield couldn't handle. Holyfield's exhausted too. The big man from Brooklyn.
Yep. Getting ready to become the heavyweight champ. Oof. I gave it to them. Not
the first great idea that we've stolen.
Yeah, what do you? I used to love Jim Lampley and George Foreman when they did fights on HBO. I loved them.
I love Lampley and Foreman. I love Lampley and the late great Emmanuel Stewart. Jim Lampley is just one of the best, you know, lead guys of all time. Not just for boxing, in any sport. Jim Lampley's up there. Just a broadcasting genius, in my opinion.
Damn, Holyfield looked like he was standing, but he was done.
He's done. He had nothing. He was spent.
Got his ass whooped.
He was in a battle.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The crowd's going crazy because they saw a great fight. They also saw, a moment in history. You know, like, yeah. I said, it goes down now. I feel it's not as powerful in the past few years. I mean, Tyson Fury's kind of making it come back now a little bit, like, because he's also a colorful fighter as well. He is, give him credit, a great fighter too.
Yeah, he's great. Yep.
But they know when you see a new heavyweight champion, that those words are powerful in all sports, heavyweight champ. And then, man, when you watch a fight and you hear "and new," it's a big deal. So the crowd knows they were in for something historic.
Right. And when you're looking at this 25-year-old, you know, and there goes a little melee in the ring. But you're looking at this 25-year-old superstar now at this point, right? In the prime of his career, with, you know, his best showing, right, in the biggest moment, you know, going 32-0 with 27 knockouts at this point after this fight. And you're thinking, man, like, this is it. This is the next big, great heavyweight. It just doesn't happen. But at that night, you're thinking, okay, here we go.
And, you know, from here on, he goes the next year, he's on a tour. He gets, you know, Rock Newman, his manager, puts him on this tour. He's going not just in the country, throughout the world, which some say affected him and affected that focus.
Yep.
When we get to the next year in this rematch with Evander Holyfield, some argue no, some argue yes, but I remember him seeing, you know, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I remember when that was a big deal. Riddick Bowe guest starred on the Fresh Prince, him knocking out Will Smith and everything. Like,
yeah,
he was a star for a little while there.
Yeah, because no matter what, heavyweight champion of the world, even though it wasn't as big, let's say, like what it was in the 70s, you know, because I think this is also 92, right? So you're coming off a decade where the heavyweight division was dominated by Larry Holmes, right? So, and you have, you know, those four kings that dominated the 80s of boxing as well. So this is a, you know, the heavyweight division is just, it's coming back, right? Like, and you're looking at this guy here where it's like, this is, he's going to take it over the top. And still, like, if you're a boxing fan, I think the heavyweight champion of the world always is going to mean something.
Right. So I think the 80s, and I've said it on past episodes, is, I think, for a decade, the best decade of boxing. And I think even though you had the four kings and you had, you know, Julio Cesar Chavez and different fighters, you know, we have an episode prior, Aaron Pryor and Arguello and Macho Camacho, people still always are looking, when is that heavyweight coming? Yep. You know, Madison Avenue is even looking at, when is that heavyweight, that great heavyweight? People always want that, you know. Even though a lot of times it's funny, heavyweights aren't the most exciting fighters. I know, yeah, Ali broke the mold, but a lot of times in the ring, heavyweights, those fights aren't, like, this is a rare one to me.
Yeah.
You know, an actual great, exciting heavyweight fight, but yet throughout time and probably even still to this day, like, people want that great heavyweight. And Jose, we talk about the 90s and that decade of heavyweight being, it's, you know, right behind the 70s. Of that 90s heavyweight and all those guys, is this the best fight of the 90s heavyweights?
I would say yes. You know, I think this was, again, like, two guys at the prime of their careers. And if you look at that, like, that division in the 90s, I would say, I think Lennox Lewis would be the top of that mm-hmm. class, right? But these two guys were right up there. You know what I mean? And to have these two guys at their top, with a fight like this, like, I think I can't think of another fight that, you know, another big fight. I know there was some like other great smaller fights, obviously, but another big fight. Not sure. What do you think, Darvin?
I'm going to go Bo Holyfield too. Okay. Honestly. Watching those fight, like, that was a back and forth, and it is, to me, it's colorful with the fan man interruption. There's controversy, not only with him doing that, but how that fight goes. Because then, you know, they have to stop the round. I think it's the seventh round. It gets stopped in the middle of it, and it's like, whoever the judges award, it's like, you know, the fight was that close. It's like, well, if you don't have that interruption, would a judge go for the other guy? Or whoever would that fight have still been judged that way? It was a back and forth kind of fight, and even the action, to me, there you see the respect. I think overall now, like years later, there's respect there. But that first fight, there's like a respect thing, Riddick and Evander. The second fight, so many times they're going after the bell, and Emmanuel Stewart and Mills Lane and Bo's camp, they're trying to break them up, and it's like there's a fight in between the fight. Like, it was just, it's just great action. So for me, the best fight is the Bo Holyfield, the second one.
And correct me if I'm wrong, I'm trying to just go off memory. I felt like Holyfield was starting to take that fight over when the fan man incidents happened, and I think that little break helped Riddick Bowe, and then Riddick Bowe had a couple good rounds. I'm trying to remember that.
I don't know. That's the controversy. That's what people say. So I feel like Holyfield was winning. He had the fight. Yeah, I think he did have the advantage before then. He's winning it. Now, Bo's camp says that helps Evander. They feel like Evander was, you know, throwing a lot of punches. He was tiring out, and that gave him rest. Holyfield looked like we were going to put him out, and then that gave him rest, and now he was good to go. So a lot of finger point. We'll never technically know, but that's what's fun about it. It's a close fight, and I think you could look at either side and see, I can see that, but it's a neck and neck fight. So I think the best fight of the heavyweights in the 90s is Bo Holyfield 2. The most infamous to me involves Riddick Bowe, but to me, that Bo Galata, I remember watching that live. Yeah. And there's a few times in sports where the next day on SportsCenter, all I do is just watch it. Miles at the Palace was one of those. I saw it live, and then that next morning, well, night into the morning, I just couldn't help but keep watching it. I remember my mom saying, "You've just seen this all day." I go, "It's just bizarre. I can't help it." The first time I did that was I was younger, and then the Bo Galata fight. I remember my dad's friend had the fight. We go over there, and just seeing all that stuff at Madison Square Garden and the riot, and Jim Lampley doing it from high above, and him talking about he had a young daughter in there, and George Foreman, "No, young man, don't go in. No. Yeah. That was the most infamous thing, because that was just.
That was crazy.
You just, Galata kept, and it's just, sometimes you're just like, why do you keep hitting him low? Like, you just want to, like, to this day, I'm just like, bro. Well,
I think we found out, like, what happened. He was just a nasty, dirty dude, man. Like,
he was nuts, but it's just like, he was a talented fighter himself.
And he was whooping Riddick Bowe's ass.
Yeah.
He didn't really have to do that. And he just,
that's what, if he was a bum, I would get it. But he was a talented fighter himself and was winning those fights.
He was whooping his ass. Like, and I was shocked that he was beating him that bad. And then that kept happening. Then here comes the guy with the walkie-talkie. He was hitting him in the head with it. It's nuts, man. I remember watching. I was like, whoa, this is next level nuts.
Which I got to give those security guys credit, because, like, they're not just hitting a guy. Like, Galata got the gloves on. He's 6'4 and big. Galata, like, looked scary. There's a few fighters who look – Galata, like, looked scary.
Yeah, he looked like Drago. Like, if the Rocky, like, that would have been my pick right there. He just looked mean, was mean, he was nasty. He was just a bad dude, you know what I'm saying, in the ring. And he just couldn't help himself. But that was definitely an infamous fight. And that's what I mean with this 90s division, man, at this time. It's, like, so much. And then you got, like, Tommy Morrison, who they're trying to hype up, and – you know, he's in the Rocky movie, and then Ray Mercer destroys him in the corner. And then we all find out, you know, Tommy Morrison comes out that he was sick and all that. Like, it was just so much in this division that was just memorable, man. And then again, though, you know, you got Riddick Bowe and Holyfield with this trilogy, is a lot of people go to this when they think about that era.
Hey, you have Michael Moore. Michael Moore beats Holyfield a few years later after this to get the title. Then he gets upset by George Foreman. You got
Foreman in this division out of nowhere, like years later, just a nice guy. And, you know, that was crazy too. Like, because, you know, we knew about Foreman from obviously everything in the past. And then next, you know, he's coming back, this bigger, older guy. And, you know, we got the Foreman grew out of that. Like, which
I'm we really did.
So
I'm very appreciative.
Yeah, very much so.
I know he is too, though. He made a lot of money off of that.
Yeah, he was one of those, like, you know, that was one of the, like bounce back, like greatest bounce back. Because everybody hated George Foreman. He was a nasty. You talk about Glada. Foreman was very similar to that. He was just a monster in the ring. And then when he came back, he was all smiles and everybody loved him. And he was like America's favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was just a very interesting division. But these two guys were at the top, you know, for a while there. And this fight here and a couple fights we were talking about were some of the most memorable fights I've ever seen.
And I feel like its heyday is maybe like, you know, early to mid, but really it lasted the late 90s where you even get finally Holyfield and Lennox Lewis fighting later in the decade.
Yeah.
Tyson and they fought in the 2000s, but at that point it was different. But, you know, the Klitschko's coming up in later, like early 2000s. So it kind of lasted for a little while there, but I think definitely the heyday was like this early to mid for the 90s heavyweight run. But
yep,
Jose, this was it's always fun doing boxing. It's something that when we get that chance, we don't only get a chance to because we, you know, there's the other sports going on, but when we get a chance to look at boxing, I know you love it. It's a love of yours, love of mine. So to go down memory lane and look at boxing history, I always get hyped for it.
Yeah, for sure. It's a great sport, obviously, and I know it's not still a popular sport. I know MMA is really challenging it, but I'm old school, man. I'm always going to love a great. There's nothing like a big fight. You know what I'm saying? Like Look, I'm not a big MMA guy. I know Jeremy, you're a bigger fan than I am. I know dudes get hyped for that, but for me, there's nothing like a big time fight on a Saturday night. You know, you got your boys with you watching it. It's just. Boxing is just something different. Like, we all have the Super Bowl and NBA Finals and all that, but a big boxing match is just, there's nothing like it, you know, the energy you get from that. So, no, this was fun, too. I know we got a couple others lined up. I can't wait to do those as well.
So, let us know who your favorite fighter was, what you think of the 90s heavyweights, what you think the best fight, if you agree, Jose, myself, or you have another choice you can bring up there, too, of the best 90s heavyweight fight. Hit us up on Twitter at Bigger Game Pod. You can also follow us on Instagram at Bigger Game Pod. So for the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Jose Ruiz, I'm Jeremy Dove. Thank you guys for listening and watching Bigger Than the Game with Jeremy and Jose.
Peace.